Now, I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Lee C. from Santa Maria.
Thanks, Zach. I'm Lee, alcoholic. Too high, lower it down. First, I want to thank Joseph. Where's he at? Joseph, right there. Thanks for the invitation. Much appreciated. And the coordination. It took a lot of coordination. I'm from Santa Maria. A lot of people don't know where Santa Maria is. Michael Jackson pedophile trial. Oh, yeah. Now, Northern Santa Barbara County. That's where I'm from. So I coordinated this in relation to some other things I'm doing down here this weekend, and I appreciate Joseph's hospitality. It's good to see Tom. Tom and I had the same sponsor for a number of years, and he's actually your speaker next week. So if I bore the hell out of you tonight, come back and Tom will entertain you next week. That'll be good. Marie, I just saw Marie over here. Marie, I first met Marie at the San Fernando Valley Convention when she was the chairperson in 2002, and here she is tonight. It's a trip, man. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, everywhere you go, you have friends, you know. And then my brother Dave. My brother Dave came down here. He lives down here, but I came to hang out with him. We had dinner together and coffee. And Dave and I met at the United States Penitentiary in Lompoc, California. Right. Yeah. And now here we are, both on the free other side of the wall. You know, it's pretty good stuff. I'll probably talk a little bit about that. And our 10-minute, Nate. Right on. Good job, man. And I appreciate the courage. And Alcoholics Anonymous is the absolute best thing that ever happened to me. I love Alcoholics Anonymous with my entire heart and soul. My home group is the Thursday Night Men's Stag in Santa Maria. My sponsor is a man named Victor T. And my sobriety date is December 10th, 1987. Now, I don't share that to impress you. I share that for a few reasons. One, that's what I've been taught. My sponsor, prior sponsor and previous sponsors taught me, you know, always share your all those three things. So I do. The second is I'm very proud of those three things. My sponsor, Victor T., the best sponsor in the world for me. Absolutely. I had a long-distance sponsor for a number of years, and now I have a local sponsor, and it's been really a great change for me to get a guy in my area who's at the meetings I'm at, and Victor's been wonderful. He's taught me a whole new loving side. I'm a very strict, regimented guy, and I get in guys' faces, and I say, this is how to do it, and Victor's taught me to be a little bit more loving and softer and kinder. And my sobriety day, December 10th, I'm very proud of that day. You know, I mean, it's a great day. On December 10th, 1987, I woke up, I went to the front room, and I pulled down a fifth of whiskey that I had opened the night before, and there was like a finger's width left in the bottom of it. And I looked at the woman I was married to at that time, and I said, how much of this did you drink? And she said, none of it. And I said, damn it. I did it again. I did it again. I had not intended to drink a fifth of whiskey all by myself again. I was going to Cal Poly up in San Luis Obispo. I'd taken my last final for the quarter. I came home. I was going to get buzzed. Just feel good. Celebrate. Not drink a fifth. So I made a few phone calls and found out about this AA thing, and at noon that day I was at the Big Book Study at the Pioneer Group in San Luis Obispo. No idea what was read, don't know who was there except for one guy, Jack L. Jack had 14 years sobriety at that time, he's got 41 now. 41 now. And the reason I remember Jack is because after the meeting he came up to me and he put out his hand, he said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he had a big book, a lot like this one. It had a circle and a triangle on it. It was a third edition big book, just like this one, hardback. And he tried to give it to me, and I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't take it, not because I wasn't interested in what you had here. I was. I had to quit drinking. I couldn't not drink. I could go long periods and not drink, no problem. But when I started, get the hell out of the way because I'm getting wasted. I cannot control it. So I knew it wasn't that I wasn't interested. I was. The reason I wouldn't take this book from him, as I mentioned, I was going to Cal Poly. I was paying 60, 70 bucks for a book just like this. And I figured that's what AA was going to charge, 60, 70 bucks. And in school, you could sell it back at the end of the quarter. I didn't think AA would buy it back. but you know what? Jack explained it to me and taught the deal to me. And I just brought this book in out of my trunk because I carry them around with me just like Jack did. And if anybody needs a big book, after you can have this one after the talk. And I tell you what, if this talk sucks, if I'm terrible tonight, if I bore you to tears, But if somebody takes this book, it's all worth it. It's all worth it to me if you need a book. And the other thing, Jack must have said something about sponsorship. And I said, well, will you be my sponsor? And he said, sure. So, at the end of my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a big book and a sponsor. How many of you can say that? Every now and then a hand will go up, yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't read that book or call that sponsor for 5.5 years. Now how many people, you know? Yeah. For 5.5 years, I went to meetings and I didn't drink. For 5.5 years, I was what I refer back to as being stark raving sober. Stark raving sober. I came here to not drink, and I was not drinking just fine, thank you very much. You know, I might get called on in a meeting and I'd say something like, if you don't drink and you don't use, no matter how you do it, you're not wrong. And you know what would happen? They wouldn't call on me again. That's what would happen. And I'd punish that meeting and quit going to it. If they're not calling on me, I'm not going to go. And within a relatively short period of time, I wasn't going to many meetings because I was punishing them all. They didn't notice. But 5.5 years of that. And the woman I was married to at the time came across some poetry I'd written. Some dark, dark poetry. And, you know, I like to write. If I could go back to school, I'd be an English major because I like to write. Maybe not inventories, but I like to write. But she came across this poetry, and within a couple days, I was checked into the psych ward at French Hospital in San Luis Obispo. That's how dark it was. It was dark. And it was a miracle to get checked into that psych ward. It was a miracle for a couple reasons. One, our healthcare provider at the time was an HMO. And normally with an HMO, you need a referral from your primary physician to a secondary physician who refers it to a panel. And within a week, if it's an emergency, something happens. I was checked into that psych ward within 3 days. And the other reason it was a miracle is because while I was in that psych ward, I took with me a big book. I took a 12 and 12. And they had plenty of paper and pens. And I did my first inventory. Now, it's a joke how bad that inventory is. I still have it. Because what I did is I went to page 64 and 5, and I looked at that list. And I saw this list of all of the wrongs that had done me. And, you know, I'm resentful at the cause and affects my. So I wrote all that down. I didn't turn the page on 67 where it says, setting aside the wrongs others had done us, we looked at our own part in it. I didn't do that. I just did what was on page 65. Okay, but it's a very effective inventory for a couple reasons. One, in order to do a second inventory, you have to have done a first one. You can't just jump to your second inventory. To do a third inventory, you have to have done two. To take continuous inventory, you got to be doing it. And that was my first one. No matter, it's hilarious. It's so funny. But since I didn't turn the page and get to my part in it, I also didn't need to get rid of it. I didn't need to burn it or tear it up or anything, so I still have it. And I'll pull it out. I'll pull it out with the guys I'm working with that are slow, like me, work at the speed of pain. And I'll pull it out. And I'll say, look, man, you want to wait? This is what you got to look forward to. Because it's written on San Luis Obispo, French Hospital, Psychiatric Ward, letterhead. They see that, they start writing quick, man. You know, over in NA, they talk about jails, institutions, or death. And for me, it was that institution, man. And I tell you what, I don't believe, my personal belief, follow what your sponsor says, but to me there's no wrong way to do an inventory. None. Zero. There's no wrong way to do an inventory. I have found for me I've gotten a lot better as I've been doing them, just like anything else in life. The more I do it, the better I get at it. So now I do inventories almost monthly, regularly, I've found, because I'd go years or long periods of time without doing an inventory. And then I do one and go, my God, do I feel good. Man, why didn't I do this sooner? So now I do them quite often, you know, because I like the feeling of getting rid of that stuff, free of that stuff. So I got in that psych ward, did the inventory, and I got out of the psych ward, and I was an entirely different person. I had started working the steps now. I started going to meetings and getting involved in service and doing the things and listening at meetings and paying attention, and I became a whole new man, completely different. But from whence had I come, I always say. I like talking about what it's like now. I like sharing the steps, and I like sharing service and what my life is like now. But I got to tell you just a tad bit about who I was, and especially here, because I grew up here. I grew up in San Diego. You know, I grew up in Mission Beach. Pacific Beach. I'm a total beach rat, man. I mean, this is where I grew up. And I grew up, I had a single mom. I grew up in the 60s. My mom, I remember peace marches and anti-Vietnam marches. I remember love-ins in Balboa Park. Some of these guys are going, yeah, they remember them too. They were there. But yeah, I remember these love-ins in Balboa Park and a guy named McGovern, some guy named McGovern against some guy named Nixon who was like my mom, the Antichrist. My mom hated this guy Nixon. And my mom was very left-wing liberal. To this day, is very left-wing. My mom is so far left, she's a danger to oncoming traffic, man. I mean, she's just over there, you know. I mean, but I remember all those things growing up, and I had no dad. My role models were those guys up on the screen. My role models were John Wayne, you know, Clint Eastwood. You know, that's what a real man is like, and that's what I tried to be like those guys, you know. And unfortunately, it didn't work out that way, you know. I mean, as an angry, pissed-off kid. You know, there's a song by Matchbox 20, and it says, you know, I don't know if I've ever been good enough. I'm feeling a little bit rusty, feel like my head is caving in. You know, and that's how I felt growing up. Unless me and Jack Daniels were hanging out. Me and Jack are hanging out, I'm fine. I'm fine. And it's not my head caving in, it's going to be somebody else's, man. Because I tell you what, we'd hang out and drink and get, I go one of two directions. I get very, very, very romantic or very, very, very violent. And the thing is to get romantic, you got to have a willing partner, right? I mean, you just do. I mean, don't go there, you know, romantic. But to get violent, you don't. So to get violent, you just hang out. You guys know Mission Beach. You're here. You can picture the boardwalk. We'd hang out on the boardwalk, get drunk. Somebody would walk by and we'd hit him. That would be it, you know. Or Tom would hit somebody and I got his back. You know how it goes. That's how we did it, you know. Growing up, high school, I mean, can you imagine? I went to Mission Bay High. And then can you imagine? Could you imagine going to a high school dance sober? The Al-Anons are going, yeah. Well, no. I mean, they didn't ask for Al-Anons today, but there might be. The Al-Anons are going, yeah, no problem. We alcoholics. Can you imagine going to a high school dance sober? No way. I go to a high school dance sober, and I go ask that girl to dance, and she says no. I'm crushed. I'm devastated. I'm useless. I'm ugly. I'm worthless. Why do I even bother? You know, it doesn't matter if she's got a cast on her leg and not dancing with anybody, you know. What matters is she said no to me, man. You know, me and Jack Daniels are hanging out, and I go ask her to dance, and she says no. I'm like, well, you look lonely, wench. I was just trying to help you out, you know. It's like, and then you ask her friend to dance, and she either says yes or she says no, and if she says no, you just hit somebody, and there goes the violence. It's on, right? I mean, that's how it was. You get it. Been there, done that. My role models, John Wayne, Clint Eastwood, you know. They outlawed Josie Wales. They outlawed, you know it. I'm impressed. No, behind this youngster. Usually the kids don't. They outlawed Josie Wales, one of the best movies of all time ever, no doubt. You know how some people know the Rocky Horror Picture Show? It still used to play in Ocean Beach. I don't even know if that theater is still here. But it used to play in Ocean Beach. And people would go there, and you couldn't even hear the speakers because everybody was talking it verbatim. Somehow people know the Rocky Horror Picture Show. That's how I know Outlaw Josie Wales. I love that movie. And the Outlaw Josie Wales, 1 hour and 28 minutes into the movie, Josie Wales rides into this ghost town. And he walks into the bar, and there's a few people there, and they're talking back and forth, and they banter back and forth a little bit, and they say, what'll it be, partner? And Josie Wales says, whiskey, straight up. And they laugh, and they say, partner. They banter a little bit more, but then they say, partner, this town's been dried up for years. We ain't got any whiskey. So Josie Wales leaves. And then in that Hollywood fashion, you hear his spurs clink as he gets closer and closer. He kicks open those bat wing doors. He's got a case of whiskey in one hand and two bottles of whiskey in the other hand. And he's the man, right? They love him. He gets the girl, kills all the bad guys. His former enemy respects him in the end of the movie, man. And I want to be just like Josie Wales. Unfortunately, in the real world, what you get is a suspended sentence for assault and battery. That's what you get in the real world. Yeah. And you don't get the girl, man. That girl don't want anything to do with you. You know, no, No, no. And then, you know, or John Wayne, you know, if you can picture John Wayne walking into a bar and, you know, moseying up to the bartender and saying, you know, pass the crack pipe, pilgrim, you'd have a different speaker. Because I'd have been smoking crack, man. But John Wayne didn't smoke crack. John Wayne drank whiskey, straight up. And that's what I drank. Whiskey, straight up. I love whiskey, man. If I'm buying. If you got something, I'll drink it, whatever you got, and you're sharing it, no problem. You know, I do not remember my first drink. I prayed, meditated. I don't know. What I do know, So I joined the military at 17 and a half, and when I came home, I was dressed, on my first leave, I came home and I was dressed in my military uniform. It was Thanksgiving. We went to the same house we went to, actually it was out here in La Mesa area. We went to the same house we went to every year. That reminds me, I'll come back to that. That reminds me, when I grew up, is anybody here from the beach, Mission Beach, Pacific Beach, a couple? See, so we people, we beach rats, back when I was growing up, anything east of I-5, you were not cool, man. It was just like, no way. I remember when my friend from high school moved to La Mesa, I'm like, are you kidding? I wouldn't speak to him for a year, man. It's like, La Mesa? No, but now you grow up and you see, you get it, I get it. But now I've forgotten the trail I was going off. Anybody remember?
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, thank you. Yeah, Thanksgiving. So I went to, I was in my military uniform, went to the same house, went to every year for Thanksgiving, some friends of my mom, left wing, anti-Vietnam, Nixon, blah, blah, and I'm wearing my uniform. Oh, not a real big hit, I tell you. And they were teasing me about it. But I had just been to basic training. I was proud of who I was, what I was doing, what I was planning to do. And then they said something that got to me. They said, you know, you look sharp in that uniform tonight, but you remember that time you were 5 years old, we gave you that hit of acid? You were tripping that day, man. And I was like, what? You gave me acid when I was 5 years old? Oh, my God. I was angry and resentful about that for years. What kind of mom lets her friends give her kid acid when he's 5? Damn. Now it's just part of my story. I was eating acid at 5. Okay. Not that big a deal. I'm not that unique. There are people, and there are definitely people that's happened to. I was talking in L.A. at Michael Smith's meeting, at The Way of Life, I think it's called, and there was a 10-minute speaker, and she was about my age, and she got up, and she was talking about when she was 5 years old, she was smoking pot with her parents. And I got up, and I'm like, damn, baby, where were you? You were stoned. I was tripping. We could have had some fun. And it is not that big a deal. I heard a story about a kid down in L.A., kindergartner. That's 5 years old. Kindergarten is 5 years old. A kindergartner came home from school, and he told his mom he learned a new word from the big kids. And she was a little bit concerned, and she said, you learned a new word from the big kids. What word did you learn from the big kids? And he said, er. She said, er? He said, yeah. She said, well, how do you spell it? He said, I don't know, Mom. And she says, well, what was the context of it? How did you learn it when the big kids taught it to you? And he said, that's easy, Mom. They went like this. Oh, there's some potheads out here, huh? I'm not a pothead, man. I did not like that pot that much. That doesn't mean if you went, and they go, thanks, because I would. Because, you know, pot gets me out of here, man. But, you know, I didn't like pot all that much. But my best friend back in the day, Ronnie D, his dad was the dealer. He lived in South Mission. Now, you guys know South Mission was the cool place. And his dad was a dealer. And his dad had the kind pot back in the day. And pot used to have seeds in it. Really? And the kids go, what? Yeah, pot used to have seeds in it. And we used to have these big black vinyl things called record albums, right? And you break the pot up and you tilt it up, you remember? Then you roll your joint. You know, man, I moved out on my own when I was 16 years old. I had enough money for booze and rent. That was it, man. Smoke a doobie at 2 in the morning and you get the munchies, you know? Go to the refrigerator. What do you got? Ketchup packets from McDonald's. That's what you got, right? But you got the munchies, so you eat them anyways, right? And they help with the cotton mouth. It helps. Or Top Ramen. You always had Top Ramen. Everybody had Top. I don't understand how come gasoline can't be like Top Ramen. Top Ramen was 10 cents a pack 30 years ago. And it's 10 cents a pack on sale today. Why can't gasoline be like that? But you might have a little macaroni and cheese. Maybe it's near payday. You might have some Kraft macaroni and cheese. What's the problem with macaroni and cheese? You don't have any milk. You don't have any butter, right? But you got the munchies and ketchup packets, so you mix it all together. You know, no, man, I know. I didn't like pot. No. Speed? No, thank you. I didn't like the feeling. My house is clean. I'm a neat freak as it is. I do not need speed to help me clean my house. Thank you very much. And I do not enjoy the sensation of my eyes beating me into the next room. You know, no, thank you. No. That doesn't mean if my friends had some speed and would share it with me, I wouldn't take it, because I would. Cocaine? No, thank you. I didn't like the high on cocaine. I didn't like the coming down feeling on cocaine. I didn't like the expense of cocaine. You know how many fists of Jack Daniels I can buy with what my friends were paying for cocaine? So I'm buying Jack Daniels, baby. Now, that does not mean if my friends handed me a mirror with some lines railed out, I wouldn't snort it, because I would. Because it gets me out of here, and I don't want to be here. But I didn't like it, much. Now, acid. I loved acid, man. Acid was cheap, it's quick, it's easy. I may have even been reliving some childhood moments and didn't know it. But The problem with acid is you cannot take acid and convince even yourself that you're maintaining. Because you know. But as I mentioned, I joined the military at 17 and a half. And back in my day in the military, they caught you using, they kicked you out. Nowadays, they throw you in rehab or something. In my day, they kicked you out. No, we don't want you. Thank you very much. So I quit using drugs, just like that. I'm not an addict. I will do whatever drugs my friends want to share with me, but I have no problem not using drugs at all. I went into the military. I went into the Army. I went into a thing called Special Forces. Anybody else? What, you know what that's called? It's like this. No, it's called the Green Berets. The Green Berets. And why would I be a Green Beret? Because John Wayne was a Green Beret. John Wayne was a Green Beret. I was a Green Beret. Right? You know, if John Wayne would have been a Navy SEAL, I'd have joined the Navy. But John Wayne was a Green Beret. Now, I have been correct, and the generation above mine, and the thank you. This is my story. That's the truth. That's how come I went in the Army, why I was a Green Beret, because John Wayne was a Green Beret. A guy came up to the thank you line one time after I spoke somewhere, and he said to me, you know, John Wayne was a Marine before he was a Green Beret. I was like, well, I didn't see that movie, man. I saw the Green Beret. So I was a Green Beret, you know. And the thing about the military back then, the slogan was, it's a great place to start. And for me, that's exactly it was. It was a great place to start. That's how I got money to go to school, was from the military. And I also got turned on to this thing called country music. Country music, man. I'm like, I'm a beach rat. I'm into rock and roll, you know. Country music, who the hell listens to country music, man? Don't raise your hand. I was in Bakersfield one time, everybody raised their hand. You know, no, man. Hicks listen to country music. Hicks, you know, I'm into rock and roll, man. You know, not the Beatles. Not the Beatles. If you're a Beatles freak, you know, amen, namaste. You know, lovely Rita, Meter Maid. I want to hold your hand. Are you kidding? Let It Be? Are you kidding me, man? I like Rolling Stones. Songs like Bitch, you know. Rip This Joint. Or If You Can't Rock Me, Somebody Will. Yeah, man. You know. Or Tom Petty, You Don't Know How It Feels to Be Me. Oh, Jethro Tull, Aqualung, Snot Running Down His Nose. I mean, that's some lyrics, baby, right there. Come on. But country music, I mean, I tell you what, though. If you can't, now I love country music, and if you can't make it to the meeting on time, and I know there's traffic here in San Diego, I mean, if you can't make it to the meeting, put it on the country music station. Country music station has it all. Country music is famous for drinking, of course. I mean, Willie Nelson's got a song, he says, I never went to bed with an ugly woman, but I sure woke up with a few. Yeah. You can change the gender, ladies, if you need to. It goes both directions, we know. You know, or I was talking up in San Francisco one time. It got all confusing which way to go. I wasn't just left that one alone, you know. You know, I got home, but she changed all the locks because I got home at the wrong 5 o'clock, you know. Yeah, country music is famous for all that stuff. And they also got one. T. Graham Brown has a song, and for people who want to get sober, he's got a song, and what he says is, I'm on my knees turning to your father. Help me turn this wine back into water. Called Wine Into Water. And I tell you what, if you remember that, T. Graham Brown, Google it, and it's him in the Grand Ole Opry with Buck Owens and all those old guys. And it's so, I almost cried the first time I watched it because it was just so heart-wrenching. He, oh, God, please help me turn this wine back into water. So they want to get sober in country music. And they got a newcomer song, or they got one way to get sober. Toby Keith's got a song, and he says, I sobered up, and I got to thinking, you ain't as much fun since I quit drinking. Yeah, don't sing that around the Al-Anons. They're not real hip on that one, I guarantee you. And if you're an addict, you're covered as well, because Hank Jr.'s got one, and he says, you know, she told me she loved me, and I told her I'd do the same, but I OD'd in Denver, and I just can't remember her name. So you're covered if you're an addict. You know, it's all there in country music. But more specifically, I got turned on to two guys, and one of them everybody knows from his dad in Monday Night Football, Hank Jr., Hank Williams Jr., that kind of country music. And another guy that people, he's more of a genre kind of singer, but a guy in this group this size, some of you guys are going to have heard of him, a guy named David Allan Coe. Yeah, a lot of you guys, a lot more than I expected. Yeah, David Allan Coe. And now if you Google him, I'm not talking about his racist, sexist songs. He's got some stuff out there. He's got a song called, I mean, he's got a... album out there called Underground Album, and it's not politically correct. So that's what I'm talking about. But he wrote songs. He's got some more mainstream songs, you know. But more important, or more about it, what David Allan Coe sings about. And I figured all this out in inventory work. is that why I like David Allan Coe so much is because what he sings about is pain, heartache, and betrayal. If you trust someone, you're going to get hurt. Therefore, don't even trust. Don't even bother. Don't even start. You know, he's got one song called Love is a Never-Ending War. You know, and another one called I Hate Love. More than anything else in life, I hate love. Ugh. Ugh. And you can play that and crank it loud and get drunk and go, me too, man, me too. I get it. I completely get it, you know. So that was the good thing about the military. I got that. I got the military. I got turned on to country music, and I got money for college. Got out of the military, went to Cal Poly. Got sober December 10th, 1987. 5.5 years of stark raving sober. For 5.5 years, I worked half a step. On December 10th, 1987, I admitted I'm powerless over alcohol. I can't drink. I can't. But my life unmanageable? Psh, what are you talking about, man? I'm going to Cal Poly. I had a wife, 2 kids at the time. I'm a former Green Beret. I'm working at UPS in the morning loading trucks, going to school during the day. I got a 3.7 GPA. What are you talking about? My life unmanageable. I don't want to hear it. Thank you very much. And see, I can rationalize. And I don't think it's an alcoholic trait. I think it's a human trait. If you guys have ever had Bill C. down here, he talks great. I love what he shares. It's a lot of stuff we want to blame on being alcoholic. It's nothing being alcoholic. It's human nature. There's nothing about us specifically. And I agree with that completely. I don't think, but I can rationalize a lot of things. And but there was no way that I could rationalize me, my life being manageable by me, and being in the psych ward at French Hospital. I couldn't make it work. I could not convince even myself I'm managing my life and I'm in a psych ward. I couldn't do it. So I had to admit my life was unmanageable by me. I forced God in His infinite wisdom and mercy, whatever. And that's the other thing. I didn't want to hear about God. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't want to hear about God. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. No, I don't want to hear about God. Thanks. And to be restored to sanity would mean I'm insane. And I'm not insane, thank you very much. Remember, I'm not listening at meetings. I'm not paying attention to what's being shared. I'm not asking anybody for help. I know everything. So, you know, what are you going to tell me about it, you know? And my idea of insanity is any early Jack Nicholson movie, you know, The Shining, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That's what insanity is. I'm not like either of those things. Therefore, I don't need to be restored to sanity. Thank you very much. Where my moment came was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous after I'd been in the psych ward. I'm a diehard, and you guys can relate to this. I'm a diehard Charger fan. I grew up here. I even like the Padres. But I still like them. I do. I used to have season tickets. I'd drive the 6 hours down here on Sundays or sometimes Saturday nights to watch the Charger games. And when they were 14-2, it was fun. When they were 1-15, it sucked driving home, man. But diehard Charger fan. And what someone said about this insanity thing is she said to me one day, she said, you know what, on Sunday morning, get a case of Coca-Cola. And while you're watching football, drink it. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? That's sick. Can you imagine drinking a case of Coca-Cola while you watch football? No, but make it Coors or Budweiser. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That is doable. And she said, well, that's insane thinking because it's exactly the same amount of liquid. And I go, oh, that's what they're talking about. Okay, all right. I need to be restored to sanity. I turn my will and my life over to the care. I used to share that the only reason I didn't drink those first 5.5 years is that I got lucky. I got lucky. Why did so many people go in and out, some never come back, yet I stayed. Stark raving sober, tender dry, whatever, I didn't drink. And I used to share, I got lucky. And I was sharing that at my home area one night at the Lano Club, actually, and a newcomer came up to me after the meeting. His nickname was Catholic Brian because he was a very religious man. And he came up to me after the meeting and he said, you know what, Lee, you didn't get lucky, he said. You had a God in your life looking out for you and you didn't even believe in him. And it hit. That moment in the Alano Club in Santa Maria, California, I found a God of my understanding. Okay, cool. Got a God now. Started doing the deal. Started going to church. Had an open mind. Learned that in here. More open mind. And then I became a Christian. Okay, that's cool. Christianity's good. I like it. I'm good. One of my daughters, one of her major in church, in school was religion. And she invited me to upstate New York and took me to a Buddhist monastery for a retreat. A guy named the Thin Nhat Hanh group of Buddhism. And it changed my life. Changed my life that weekend. It slowed me down. I was 21, 20 years sober at the time. Got me into meditation. I've been meditating almost every day since that time. Slowed me down. I remember the exact moment. We had just finished meditating in the room, and it was time to go eat in the dining facility. And we left the meditation. I'm like, let's go. Well, let's go, let's go, let's go. And I got behind one of the Buddhist monks, and he's just cruising. He's what they call mindful walking. And I'm like, come on, come on, come on, come on. And then I realized, what does it matter? Because the way they do the food there is they don't start eating until everybody is there. And then you hold hands and pray, and then you eat. So even if I got there first, it doesn't matter. I can't eat anyways until everybody gets there. Took a deep breath and slowed down. And I tell you what, even on the drive down here today, if a car wanted to get in front of me, even in L.A. traffic, man, you want it, go for it. You know what, man, good luck to you. Swear to God, it's unbelievable that that's me. I can't believe it, but it is. New York has boroughs, neighborhoods, basically, but it hasn't been in New York. I'd only been there the one time. But in these neighborhoods, they have different groups of people, ethnicities. And one of them was this group, called Hasidic Jews. And I looked at these Jews, and I was like, they are extremely proud of who they are. They're proud of their heritage. They're proud of being Jewish. And I'm Jewish. My grandparents were Jewish. My mom just didn't bring me up Jewish. I didn't know. I never asked her why. Tomorrow morning, I might. I'm going to go see her. You know, but I thought we were ashamed of being Jewish. I don't know. But I saw them, and I thought, wow, I want to know more about my Jewish heritage. I said that, and I thought, okay. I'm leaving New York City in the airport. And a young Hasidic Jew comes up to me, and he says, are you Jewish? If he'd asked me 35 years, the day or 35 years prior, I would have said no. But because of what had happened to me in New York City, I said yes. And he said, we need you. And in the Jewish faith, they have a thing called a minyan. And in a minyan, they need 10 men. And they had 9. I was their 10th. And it's only recently I can talk about it without crying. Because I cannot say that wasn't God. I can't. I was their 10th guy. I have no idea what they said. It was in Hebrew. And they were praying and saying this stuff. And I'm crying. Big tears coming. Just proud and honored to be part of it. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous not wanting to hear about God. And now I consider myself a Christian Buddhist Jew. I'm proud of it. That works in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. In AA, you can have any God you want, and that's the one I choose, just like that. My God is loving and kind. I go to Presbyterian Church. In my church, I tell you what, I almost started crying. My pastor one day when they were doing communion, he said to the congregation, he said, if you can't get up and walk down here to take this, please raise your hand. It would be my honor to bring it to you. And I'm like, man, that's my kind of people. You know, that's my kind of people. Now, anyways, church and God of my understanding. And I just got the 10-minute dealy bopper here. And don't worry, I know you guys, I'll finish on time. I know some of you have a few blocks to drive home tonight. I'll get you out of here, I promise. Someone talked about getting on their knees and praying. And I'm like, nah, man. You know, real men don't get on their knees. You know, you tell me one movie John Wayne got on his knees and prayed, man. I mean, you know, Clint Eastwood was a preacher in Pale Rider, and he didn't get on his knees. And then someone said something that made all the difference. And what they said is, put your shoes underneath your bed at night. And while you're down there, say a quick prayer. All right. I'm going to put my shoes underneath my bed. I'm getting on my knees to put my... I want to make it clear. That's why I'm getting on my knees, to put my shoes underneath my bed. Locked the door, drew the shades, and put my shoes underneath my... While I was down there, I said a quick prayer. Changed my life. Still doing it today. Every night, I get on my knees and thank God for another sober day. I roll out of bed in the morning onto my knees and thank God for another sober night. I usually reach for my wife's hand, new current wife, next wife, wife two. I don't have time to go into what happened. I don't even want to. But, and then this morning, with wife number two, I have a new daughter, a five-year-old. And she happened to come into our room right when I rolled out of bed. And I said, hey, Abby, you want to pray with me? And so she got on her knees right next to me. Which ties right into my other. My youngest is 25, and my oldest is 33. Well, now the 5-year-old. But I went from drawing the shades and closing, locking the door to praying openly on my knees. And my other kids, when they were younger, used to come in and pray with me. Marie knows, Jessica. I used to bring my kids. My kids have been to more meetings than most alcoholics have. More commitments to alcoholic meetings. My kids, no Alcoholics Anonymous. But I got on my knees and started praying, and it changed my life. And there's a whole lot more that I could talk about there, but in the interest of time, I want to talk a little bit more. I want to talk about family. Because I usually bring my kids. And my wife was scheduled to come. My wife was coming. My wife and my current daughter were coming with me, and we were going to, Dave was going to take us to SeaWorld tomorrow morning, and then the 5-year-old got sick, so I came down on my own. But I used to, you know, whether it's a family disease, whether it's inherited or learned, I don't care. For me, it's family disease, family recovery. So my kids come to meetings. And I used to secretary a big speaker meeting. I used to work. Okay. Back. Remember in high school how they used to have most attractive, most likely to succeed, most athletic. Remember all that? If they would have had most likely to end up in a penitentiary, it would have been me, hands down. I was expelled from 3 schools, kicked out. That was beyond the suspensions, kicked out. And if I would have gotten that award, they would have been correct. Most likely to end up in a penitentiary. Because I used to work at the United States Penitentiary, Lompoc. Ha, ha, ha. Faked you out in the beginning, didn't I? Ha, ha, you thought. That's where I met David. David didn't work there. But I used to work there. I'm an accountant by trade. I'm an accountant. And on the side, I was doing what Matt, I think it was, the guy, the H&I guy, what we H&I people do. And I don't have time. But I used to bring in people on my own time. Because that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, to be of service. And one day the warden called me to his office and he said, you know what, you're a fine accountant. I have no problem with your work. But I've been watching you. And you're more valued to me working with these guys one-on-one. How would you like to be a drug treatment specialist? And I said, whoa, time out. Thank you, sir. I am honored. I appreciate it. I'm glad you're seeing what's going on. Because we went from having one meeting a week that was sporadic to having 5 meetings a week. One of which was an NA meeting. Because the way these guys were sharing in there, if they got out one of these old time and they shared like they're sharing in there, some old-timer out here on the street would get in their face. We don't talk like that in AA. He'd hit him and violate and end up back in prison. So we started an NA meeting on the inside. But the warden said to me, how would you like to be a drug treatment specialist? And I said, sir, thank you, but no thank you. I do this for fun and for free, to stay sober myself. He said, you don't understand. I'm the warden. Tomorrow you report to psych services. You have a new job. Oh, I was devastated. I was scared to death. I shared about it in meetings. I wrote New York. I talked to my sponsor. And after a meeting one day, someone made all the difference, saved my life, I think, and what she said to me is, she said, Lee, you're not getting paid to do 12-step work. You're getting paid to help make 12-step work available. Because as Dave can attest, I didn't go into the, I just brought the you in. I brought you in, and then I sat in my office while the meetings went on. And then once a month, we used to have a big speaker meeting. Circuit speakers. I'd hear them on CDs or tapes, and we'd bring them into the penitentiary. The convicts had a joke. Could commit a crime, go to prison, have circuit speakers come visit you. So, we also, they'd speak on the street that night, and my daughter Jessica used to have a commitment. It was only the first Saturday of the month, and my daughter Jessica had a commitment at that meeting. And in one month, when she was 11 years old, and she's 28 now, she got invited to go to a slumber party on the first Saturday of the month. And then I had a speaker meeting. And she used to ring the bell, like Jeff, right? Jeff, and count the 7th tradition and sell the cassette tapes. You know what a cassette is? Yeah, these have these cassette tapes. That's how long ago. Well, I'm sorry. You're sitting up front. I love you, man. There's other young. So anyways, but on the first set, she got invited to the slumber party, and she came up to me and she said, Dad. And I said, Jessica, it's okay, baby. Go to your slumber party. It's okay. And she looked up at me and she said, but Dad, I have a commitment. I was like, Dad, I asked her to sponsor me, man. I swear to God. I had guys that didn't show up at that meeting for a girl. And here my 11-year-old daughter was showing up. And it affects me to this day. To this day. See, gosh dang it. And this clock, I don't know if this is good or bad, having this clock up here. Because, see, it's terrible for me because I can't see it. But for you guys, if the speaker sucks, you'll be looking at the clock going, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And the speaker will think you're looking at him or her, right? I mean, but anyway. I'll tie it into this. Here's who I am today still. I play softball. Last night I played softball. I'm on a men's team. Actually, it's not a men's team. It's a veterans team. Band of Brothers. And I got a lot of stuff going on at my house. And it ties into what I just shared about my daughter. And so the coach every week sends out a text saying, I need a head count. Who's going to be there tonight? And I called him up and said, dude, I got a lot of stuff going on. If you got eight or less guys, call me and I'll be there. Otherwise... And we usually have 15 guys. We usually have 15 guys there. He texted me and he said, Lee, we got 8, 9 if Bob shows up. I said, okay, I'm there. I'll be there. I made a commitment. And that's not as like driving 6 hours kind of a commitment, but I made the commitment to play softball, to be there for the guys, and I went. He stuck me. Since we only had 10 when we usually have 15, I usually play catcher. He stuck me at second base. I made the first out of the game. I caught the first. I made the other team was batting. The play came to me. I got the first out. I made a few good plays. Guys were coming up to me going, damn, you play good at second base. What I remember is the one ball that was hit to me that I muffed and 2 runs scored. That's what I remember. All the guys saying you did great at second base. I don't remember that. And then I take a deep breath and I go, wait a minute. Our third baseman, one of the best players on the team, muffed one, threw it, went, 2 guys scored on his error. Do I think to myself, you're a loser? What's wrong with that guy? No. I just think, oh, well, he made a mistake. And that's what the guy, they gave me love, and none of them even remembered me, but that's me at 28 years sobriety. I still think of that error I made, not all the good plays, not the 2 RBIs I got, not the time, until I take a deep breath, and I remember. I'm like, okay, I'm good. And then after the game, one of the guys who founded the league, the Band of Brothers is what we're called, and he's in the program. He's in recovery. He came up to me, and we stepped aside, and he asked me to sponsor him. And I wouldn't have been at that game, except that my 11-year-old daughter said, but Dad, I have a commitment. AA circles all the way around. I learned from my 11-year-old daughter to keep your commitments, and she learned that from you, from me, from all of us. Ugh. I'm going to go till 5 of, okay? Yeah. Like you're going to say no. No one wants, or we're supposed to? Well, he gave me 10 minutes ago. Well, 5 minutes. His family's important, man, and life in AA is important. Oh, I'm sorry. Shit. He's like, screw this. He's going 5 more minutes. I'm done, man. It's Cliff. Some of you guys, Oceanside, and talked about Cliff. Cliff Roach was my sponsor for a long time. And Cliff taught me that there's 2 ways to be remembered as a speaker. There's 2 ways to be remembered as a speaker. You know what they are? One is to be really, really good. And the other is to go 1 minute longer than you're supposed to. They'll remember your ass. On the other hand, Tom Ivester, one time I brought him all the way out Tom Ivester from North Carolina. I brought him all the way out from North Carolina to talk in the penitentiary. And Tom, for those who don't know, was a convict and he became a warden at a prison. And I brought him into the prison to talk to the convicts. And at the end, he told them he was a warden and they were tripping. And when I brought him on the street, he said, I came a long way to talk to y'all and I'm going to go on for as long as I want to. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to do that. But, now I talk too long on that stuff. I was on family and commitments. Oh, I know, because I'll tie it into San Diego. My daughter Jessica, some of you all have certainly heard, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned how to be a dad. You people taught me to be a dad from all my kids. And Jessica lived down here for a long time, and she was the traffic chick on Clear Channel Radio. She was doing your traffic on 15 stations down here, so you guys heard her, some of y'all. In the mornings. Now she's up in San Luis Obispo in Santa Maria doing country western in the morning and she's on the DJ. And she learned that coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and hearing speakers. You know? My other daughter, Emily, her first debate in high school, her first debate, Cliff was my sponsor at that time, and her first debate in high school, she was a freshman and she got moved up to the varsity team, and on her varsity first debate ever, she won. And Cliff was my sponsor and wanted to take credit for it. I wouldn't let him. I said, no. But see, you guys know. It's amazing. People don't know Cliff anymore. It's amazing. But that's AA and my family. And so she was here. My other daughter just recently got her master's degree from San Diego State. And now she's working up at a place called Esalen in Big Sur, which is a totally pretty cool thing. And I had a resentment against Esalen for a while. I couldn't figure it out until I put it on paper. And you know what the resentment was? If anybody's been to Esalen, it's a bunch of hippies. Hippies are the people who gave me acid, man. Hippies are the people. I'm serious. I'm not kidding. When I put it on paper, I got free of it. And now I can go to Esalen and be okay. But it was driving me crazy. I couldn't understand it. So one's up there. But she got her master's degree here at San Diego State. What is that? How does that tie into AA? Well, because of you, I learned to be a dad. I didn't give her all the money, but I gave her some, and I taught her to do the things she needed to do to get it. And then the last thing about it I would share is if I didn't talk about my relationships in high school and beyond. Were 30. To be oversimplified, they were 30 and out, 30 and out, 30 and out. Because at 30 days, she's getting close to me. And if she gets close to me, she'll hurt me. Therefore, I would sabotage the relationship before I'd let her get any closer to me. But there was one that was 6 months. And that one affected my relationships thereafter throughout my life. But I never went back to see her because I was married for 32 years. And my ex-wife wouldn't understand. Not that there was. But when I was going through the divorce, I came down here to talk. And I looked her up on Facebook. And we got together. We met at the PB Junior High, at the PB Rec Center. For those of you that know the era, PB Rec Center is where I used to smoke cigarettes when I was 13 years old, and then go to PB Junior High. And we met in the parking or in the playground, and she has a little kid, and we started talking, or she started talking, and I listened. And I listened. And when she finished, instead of saying, "What? Are you crazy? That's not what happened. Don't you remember when you did this and you did that?" And that's not what I said. When she finished, I said, "Oh my God, I am so sorry. What can I do to make it up to you? Because you taught me that." I didn't even go into the stuff I felt, of the things I had. It wasn't the proper place or time. And she's an athlete, and she runs. And she said, "Do you want to come running with me tomorrow?" Saturday. It would be Saturday morning. And I said, "Sure, I'd love to." And she says, "Okay, I'm going to run from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. I know. I said, "Oh, no, I'm good, thanks." You know, I was going to Bakersfield to talk Saturday night, so I couldn't, even if I would have wanted to, which I didn't. But I said, "But thank you anyways." But Saturday morning she called me, and she said, "Look, I'm willing to forgo my running if you'd like to meet me at Solana Beach." So we met at the Solana Beach right there, and we laid out and we talked for a little while, and then I had to get on the road to get up to Bakersfield. And we walked up to right by that little shower and restroom area in that little area that those of you know Solana Beach. And I went to hug her like you've taught me in alcohol, like sideways, gentlemanly, like not trying to get any cheapies in, nothing, just gentlemen, just being a proper gentleman. And she freaking grabbed me and kissed me. With a tongue and everything. I'm like, "Damn!" My entire life, I've always been the kisser. I've never been the kissy. And she kissed me. I'm like, "Oh my God." Insane. And she said to me, "I cannot believe you were the guy I dated in high school." And I said, "That's Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's absolutely the best thing that ever happened to me. And I hope you feel that way too. Thanks."